Hey, good morning. It's a pleasure to welcome everybody back. It's a pleasure to welcome everybody back after the Yom Tov hiatus, and certainly we hope that everybody. We hope that everybody had a wonderful Yom Tov, and Be'ezus Hashem, as they say, should be a gesunter winter, a pleasant winter season for everybody. In terms of this coming year and the topic, you know, last year we had done different Parshas HaShavuah related things. I was thinking tentatively of devoting this year to Tefillah and different shiurim related to Tefillah, to prayer. Again, exactly how we'll do it, I'm open to some suggestion. Tefillah, yeah. And actually, if you recall, if you were here, I think about 14, 15 years ago, we did a segment on Tefillah, but, you know, hopefully we could... We did. The words haven't changed in those past 14, 15 years, but I think, we could probably stand to go back and do some things over again, review a little bit, but also some new things. You know, we'll be focused on some new things during this upcoming year. What I wanted to devote today to is a specific aspect of Tefillah, which is very relevant. I want to speak about the Tefillah, the words of Mashiv HaRuach U'Morid HaGeshem, which we just started inserting into our Shemana Esrei, on Shmini Atzeres, to talk about them a little bit, both from a halachic point of view, but also to appreciate their significance to a greater extent. And hopefully these four words, which, you know, sometimes we view more as a nuisance than anything else. They're a nuisance in the sense that if you forget them, you have to go back and repeat Shemana Esrei over again. So hopefully we'll try to move past viewing them as a nuisance and really try to understand why they're so essential to the davening and to the recitation of Shemana Esrei. First of all, a technical point. Is it Mashiv HaRuach U'Morid HaGeshem or Mashiv HaRuach U'Morid HaGoshem? Alright, let's just talk about that for a moment. What's the difference between Geshem and Goshem? The word is Geshem. Geshem means rain. You know, nobody ever looked outside and said, oh, there's a lot of Goshem coming down. It's Geshem. So why would it be Goshem? Well, we find in Biblical Hebrew that when a word that has two segels, right, that has two S sounds, is at the end of a sentence with the end of a phrase, Biblical Hebrew grammar makes the first segel into a comma. Right? So, for instance, the word yeled, if you put yeled at the end of a sentence in Hebrew, it would become yaled. Right? It's purely a grammatical thing. So the question really is, how do you punctuate the bracha in which we have Mashiv HaRuach U'Morid HaGeshem? Is there a period at the end of the word HaGeshem? Or is there more of a comma at the end of the word HaGeshem? So, this is actually a machlokas between contemporary poskim, and if you go back and check manuscripts of Sidurim going back many, many years, you find both versions in the old manuscripts as well. Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal writes in the Tshuva that the proper way to punctuate it is HaGoshem. Mashiv HaRuach U'Morid HaGoshem. So what that means from Rav Moshe's perspective is that there's a full stop at the end of the word HaGoshem. Ato gibor la'olam Hashem, mechayim eifim ato rav lo'oshia mashi baruach u'morid HaGoshem, and you pause, because there's a full stop there. It's the end of the sentence, as indicated by the fact that you have the come up at the end of the word HaGoshem. In contrast, with Yaakov Kamenetsky Zatzal, took the position that it should be punctuated HaGeshem, and if you read it HaGeshem, presumably you shouldn't stop so much at the end of HaGeshem. In other words, you would say, Ato gibor la'olam Hashem, mechayim eisim ato rav lo'oshia mashi baruch u'morid HaGeshem, kama, mechal kochayim b'chesed, mechayim eisim b'rachamim rabim. Right? If you understand it as being HaGeshem, So then there's a comma after the word, as you know, and you kind of read it in conjunction with the next paragraph, Machalko Chayim B'Chesed, as opposed to there being a full stop, you know, if it's Hagoshem. So, you know, it's interesting just to note, growing up, most of the Sidurim that I davened out of all said Hagoshem. When Art School came out, so Art School wrote Hageshem. I think the story behind it, in all likelihood, is that Rabbi Nachman Sherman, Volker Zunstein, is a Talmud of Tzara Vadas, and I think he felt very partial to the perspective of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. So, you know, one of the advantages of putting out a Siddur is that you get to choose the punctuation. So he punctuated the Siddur in accordance with Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky's position that you say Hageshem as opposed to Hagoshem. I guess there was a backlash, because in the later editions of the Art School Siddur, they write Mashi Baruch Umarim Hageshem, and then they put in brackets, some strange people say Hagoshem. Well, they don't say the word strange, but some people say Hagoshem. You know, again, throwing a bone to those who follow the position of Moshe Feinstein that's properly punctuated Hagoshem. I remember about a year or two ago, a prominent Rav in Rosh Yeshiva, who's a Talmud of Tzara Vadas, happened to daven here in the shul, and he was in Avelus, so he davened for the Amud, and it was during the winter. He said, "Mashiv Haruach Omarid Hagoshem." So I went over to him after the davening, and I said, "I'm just curious. I don't find this on anybody. You know, whatever you want to do is fine. Certainly of the things that we let happen here in the shul, that's not one of the more outrageous things that has ever happened here. But I thought I was just a little bit curious. I know the Rav's the Talmud of Tzara Vadas. It struck me as a little bit strange that you said Hagoshem as opposed to Hageshem. I mean, was that because you're in the Lower East Side, you want to follow Rav Moshe?" And he shrugged. He said, "Look, when I grew up, we had the Shiloh Siddur, and it said Hagoshem, and however old I was when I started davening, we davened out of the Shiloh Siddur, it said Hagoshem, and the fact that I went to Tzara Vadas afterwards didn't necessarily take me away from what I had learned as a child." I suspect for many of us, the question of what we say in our davening is really more influenced by what we learn in first grade, second grade, third grade, than, you know, what we may develop or think about, you know, later on in life. So, bottom line, you know, there is support for both positions, Hagoshem versus Hageshem. And the one thing just to be aware of is that, just in terms of how we say the bracha, if you're going to say Hagoshem, there's a little bit more of a pause before you go on to Machal Kilchayim. If you're going to say Hageshem, you say Hageshem, you know, kind of, there's more of a flow between the Hageshem and Machal Kilchayim, because it's more of a comma than a period. I don't think so. I don't think it's an Ashkenaz side thing. You know, again, it's just different versions of how to punctuate the words. Again, you can't really tell from the Mishnah from the Gemara, because the Mishnah and the Gemara are written without punctuation, you know, without nekudos. So, you know, even though the Gemara talks about saying Mashi Barachu Marid Ha something, you know, we're not sure whether to punctuate it Hageshem or Hagoshem. And, you know, so we're left with a little bit of a quandary. Either way, I mean, nobody thinks that if the correct way is Hageshem, you're not Yotzei if you say Hagoshem, or vice versa. So again, at the end of the day, whichever one you say, you know, you're on good footing and you have good rabbinic support for whatever you're doing. That's purely on a technical level. Let me try to address on a more conceptual level why these words are so important. Again, as we noted, if a person is supposed to say Mashiv Baruch Hu Marid Hageshem during this period of time between Shmini Atzeres and Pesach, and one fails to say Mashiv Baruch Hu Marid Hageshem, it's considered to be such a terrible omission that you have to go back and repeat Shmoneh Esrei over again. Not only that, but for the first 30 days after Shmini Atzeres, if you're not even sure whether you said Mashiv Baruch Hu Marid Hageshem, we assume that you didn't say it, because for the first 30 days after you start doing something new, you're still getting used to it. So even if you're not sure, you have to go back and say Shmoneh Esrei over again. And some people have to practice, especially on Simchas Torah, when there's a lot of downtime, to repeat to themselves 100 times, because the halacha is that if you repeat that phrase 90 times, it's the equivalent of having said Shemoneh Esrei 90 times, 3 times a day over the course of 30 days. And that way, if you say Mashi Baruch Umari Nagesha in conjunction with Mechaya Meisimata Razla Hoshia 90 times, that way you're okay if you can't remember whether you said it or not in davening. That's if you have a lot of free time on Simchas Torah, you have nothing else to do, so you can just sit there 90 times and say Mechaya Meisimata Razla Hoshia Mashi Baruch Umari Nagesha. Okay? If you stop where you are and you go back to the beginning of Shemoneh Esrei. Right. So, No, you stop, go back right to the beginning, and do not pass go, do not collect $200. Right? Just go straight back to the beginning of Shemoneh Esrei. But the question is, why is this such a big deal? Okay, so you didn't mention that the Ribbono Shel Olam causes the wind to blow and the rain to come down. Okay, you know, why is that so terrible? What's that? Okay, so again, why is it so important? And let me add to the question a little bit. We know that later on in Shemoneh Esrei, we have a bracha which we call the Birkas Hashanim, right? The bracha which asks God to bless the agriculture during that year. Baruch Aleinu Hashem Elokeinu Hashanah Hazos, this culminates with Lasa L'Tova, right? And we know in that bracha there's something called She'ela, that later on during the winter, we're going to add the words, the same Talu Masa with Rachav Nehu Adama. So they add that in on the 7th of Marcheshva, right, approximately about 2 weeks or so. Outside of Eretz Yisrael, we add it in the beginning of December, either December 4th or 5th. Again, that itself is a whole discussion why we follow the secular calendar, right? Again, maybe we'll get to that a little bit later on during the year. Right. So, well, in Eretz Yisrael, they start earlier. In Eretz Yisrael, in about 2 weeks, they're going to start saying Talu Masa, right? And we are going to wait another close to 2 months before we start saying Talu Masa. Why that is a whole fascinating shiur in itself, and we're not going to get into it today. But what is clear is that we're actually asking for rain, not in the bracha of Ata Gibor La'olam Hashem. We're actually asking for rain in a different bracha of Shemoneh Esrei. So if we're asking for rain in the bracha of Baruch Aleinu, what role does Mashi Baruch Umarit HaGeshem play? It's not a request for rain. It's not a bakasha. It's not a she'ela. So what is it? In other words, it's obviously distinct from the actual request for rain, which is in a different bracha later on in Shemoneh Esrei and follows its own timetable as to when we begin saying it. So how do you understand this Mashi Baruch Umarit HaGeshem and its importance? So to try to answer that, I want to share a very puzzling halacha, which we may or may not be aware of with regard to Mashi Baruch Umarit HaGeshem, and an explanation of that halacha, which will hopefully shed some light on this whole issue of Mashi Baruch. If you're following closely in the Sukkos Machzor, there's a little note that, at least in the Art School Machzor, right before the congregation starts saying the silent Shemoneh Esrei of Musaf on Shmini Atzeres. There the note writes that it is imperative for an officer of the congregation, I think that's how Art School puts it, the Shamas or somebody else, that they have to figure out if he was lawfully elected, I don't know, but an officer of the congregation has to announce Mashiv HaRuach Umarid HaGeshem before the congregation starts saying the silent Shemoneh Esrei. And if he doesn't announce it, the congregation should not recite Mashiv HaRuach Umarid HaGeshem in their own silent Shemoneh Esrei. Right, look at the article sitting, the article master, it's in there. This is actually, in halacha, this is referred to as hachroza. It has a name. Hachroza means announcement. And there is a requirement that a hachroza, that an announcement of Mashi Baruch Umarit HaGeshem take place before the congregation switches over to start saying Mashi Baruch Umarit HaGeshem in their silent Shemoneh Esrei. Right? In fact, the laws of Hakhrava are dealt with in considerable depth in Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Brura. Consider the following. Let's say the chazan or the shamus before the final shmonesa doesn't say the words Mashi Baruch Umari Hagesha. He just gives the universal Jewish indication that we're supposed to do something different in davening. Right? He bangs on the table. Right? Everybody knows banging on the table means do something different in davening. Right? I don't know what it means, but it means something different. Either that or stop talking. I mean, banging on the table means a lot of different things. But usually when they bang right before Shmonesh, right, it means do something different. So says the Shulchan Aruch, that's not good enough. You can't just bang on the table to let everybody know you're supposed to say Mashi Baruch Umar Nageshem. You have to say the words Mashi Baruch Umar Nageshem. Even more, let's say the Shamus bangs on the table and he yells out, Mashi Baruch. Not good enough. He has to say Mashi Baruch Umari Nageshem or Gosha, right? Whichever one it is. And there's a discussion in Mishnah Brura about the following. Let's say he forgets, right? In other words, they don't announce Mashi Baruch Umari Nageshem. But you know how it is. People start davening, and the first guy to reach Mashi Baruch Umari Nageshem in his silence for an essay says it out loud, Mashi Baruch Umari Nageshem. The Mishnah Brura discusses, is that good enough? Okay, that guy did the wrong thing. He wasn't supposed to say Mashi Baruch Umari Nageshem. But is his saying it out loud good enough to enable the other people who are in the middle of davening their own silent shmoneh to now say Mashi Baruch Umari Nageshem themselves? Is that considered to be a hachraza? Is that considered to be enough of an announcement to enable them now to say Mashi Baruch Umari Nageshem? And you look at all of this detail and all of this discussion and you're incredibly puzzled. I don't understand. Isn't the whole point of Hachrazah just a practical issue? Isn't it just to let people know that we're, you know, changing over from either saying Marit HaTol or saying nothing to saying Mashi Baruch Umari Nageshem? Who cares whether they clap or they just say Mashi Baruch or this guy says it in his own private shmoneh? Why is this an issue? Isn't it just utilitarian? Isn't it just practical that we want everybody to know that we're going to say Mashi Baruch Umari Nageshem? No, so different from Marit, depends where you say Marit HaTol, you say nothing. So we'll see based on this discussion. But we don't find this halach of hachraza with regard to any other insertion of the Shmoneh Esrei. So for instance, let's say it's the Chol HaMoed, and you want to remind everybody that we want to say Yalav Yavo in Shmoneh Esrei. So we never find a halacha that if they don't clap, you don't say Yalav Yavo. Right? Or if they don't shout out Yalla V'yavo, then you wouldn't say Yalla V'yavo because they didn't shout it out. Right? We don't find anything equivalent to that. It's only here that the halacha makes this big deal about hachrava, about having to make an announcement. What's the nature of this halacha? So Rishon Zatzal suggested the following, and I think this is really a key to understanding the whole issue of Mashi Baruch in general. The first three brachos of Shmoneh Esrei describe God. And the second bracha in particular is a description of God. It's the description of what God does. Just read the words. Atah Gibor La'olam Hashem. You Hashem are mighty forever. Mechayim Eisim Atah. You resurrect the dead. Right? Mechafel Chayim B'chesed. You provide for all living things with tremendous kindness. Mechayim Eisim. Somech Noflim. Rofi Cholim. Matir Asurim. Right? You support those who are fallen, etc., etc. It's descriptions of God. Sirim Salavation, it's not a simple thing to change how we describe God. You know, you come in one morning and you say, you know what? I want to describe God as the ultimate party goer. Right? That would be my description of God. The world's a party. God is a party goer. So I want to start saying Shmoneh Esrei, you know, Ribono Shel Olam, you're a chevraman, you're a great party goer. I want to make up all kinds of terms that are meaningful for me. You can just do that. You know, anytime you describe God in any way, it's theologically dangerous. Because you're playing with fire. Anytime you're describing the Ribono Shel Olam, you know, we tremble when we think about the concept of how we should describe God. God is really beyond our comprehension. The only way we can change our description of God was to do so with the consent of the community. Right? As the community, and again, not just the community, you know, the people have to be got in their soul, but the collective community of the Jewish people, guided by its rabbinic leadership, the Chachmei HaMasorah, you know, the Chachamim of the Gemara, only in that kind of context can we dare to change our description of what God is. When the Shamus, when the Shamus bangs on the table before the silent Shmoneshre and shouts out, Mashiv HaRuach U'Morid HaGeshem, he's a representative of the community, and again, by community I mean all of the generations, you know, that which has been accepted by the Jewish people and has been instituted by the rabbis of the Talmud, he's a representative of the community saying, we hereby are officially changing the way we're going to describe God in our brachos of Shmona Esrei. Only when he does that with the consent of the community do we have the right to change the way we're going to describe God in Shmona Esrei. Right? That's why it's different than Yalla V'Yavo. Yalla V'Yavo is just a question of reminding everybody to say Yalla V'Yavo. Masiv HaRuach U'Morid HaGeshem is much more tricky than that. It's not just reminding everyone to say Masiv HaRuach U'Morid HaGeshem. He's actually serving an important function. He is the representative of the Shabbos, is the representative of the community to authorize the saying of Masiv HaRuach U'Morid HaGeshem, not just to remind us of that fact. Once you take this idea, it opens up, I think, a tremendous degree of understanding as to the importance of Masiv HaRuach U'Morid HaGeshem. So we ask, you know, why is it that omitting these four words would mess up your whole Shmoneh Esrei? Okay, so, you know, I forgot to mention that it's the rainy season. No big deal, who cares? It's not about the rain. Really, Masiv HaRuach U'Morid HaGeshem is about God who brings the rain. It's a description of the Ribono Shel Olam, which is a seasonal description. I mean, the truth is, we really, on some level, we could say Masiv HaRuach U'Morid HaGeshem during the summer as well. I mean, God is always the one who brings down the rain. It's just, it's a little part of season to describe God in those terms when it's not actually the time for bringing down rain. However, it's less about the rain and more about the one who brings the rain. The Ribono Shel Olam is the one who brings the rain. We're talking about the Ribono Shel Olam, and apparently it's very important for us during this time of year to appreciate that description.
So when they forget the
name
and say, when do they...
Right, so when the Chazan does the Chazar Sashas and he says Geshem, again, assuming they're not that dysfunctional a soul, and the Chazan actually remembers to say Geshem in Chazar Sashas, so at that point, that's a hachraza, because the Chazan is the representative of the community. So that's what he would say. Right, that's what it's so important to say, but in other words, you need gabayim who are on the ball. I mean, that's, you know, you need gabayim, you need people running the show who are on the ball. I mean, if they're off the ball, you know, a lot of things that happen that are not so good. No, the second Omrim, Omrim. Aval Omrim, in Lachash Omrim, the Hakrasa. Sichim Lachris? In law Machrisim. Yeah. Even if you remember, right. That's what I'm saying. The hachrava is so important. It's an adjustment to think in this way, because you think of the hachrava, you know, the announcement, as just serving a utilitarian purpose. It's just we want to let people know. It's not just about informing people. It's a formal part of the process that we are now going to change our description of the Ribono Shel Olam, and we need our consent and an official announcement in order to be able to make that, to make that distinction. Right. No, so the truth is, I have a guy every year who asks me this question. For whatever reason, he doesn't go to shul, the morning of Shmini Atzeres, and he davens on his own, again, whatever his question is. He wants to know, you know, what should he do in his shvanese? So the halacha is you have to wait until the shul has davened musaf, to daven musaf yourself, because again, the community has to first make that change, and then you can follow in the footsteps of the community. So if you're one of these guys, you wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, on a Shmini Atzeres morning, and you know, no minyan davens quite that early in your community, you can't make that change until your community has davened musaf and made the change. So in other words, that's how essential this idea of being part of the community is. The community has to make this change. It can't be just an individual who does it, right? Because we're changing the description of the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? Now that gives us some insight into the bracha. Let's go back and address another issue which we raised a few moments ago. Why do we have two brachas that talk about rain? I mean, there's a bracha of Baruch Aleinu where we say the same Talumata Lezacha, right? How is that different than Mashiv Aruach Umarid Agesha? So, based on what we're saying from Rasul Abeshik, the following emerges. The same Talumata Lezacha is the actual request for rain. God, please send us rain. Mashiv Aruach Umarid Agesha is less about the rain and more about the giver of the rain. It's a description of HaKadosh Baruch Hu who sends us the rain, and that's distinct from Talumata. Witness the fact that even in Eretz Yisrael, when they start Talumata on the 7th of Maheshvan, there's still a 2-week gap between Mashiv HaRuach and Talumata. Right? We're not actually asking for rain for another 2 weeks or so, but we've already, since we're in the rainy season in theory, it's already appropriate to start describing God as the one who brings down the rain, even though we don't really need the rain, you know, we don't really need the rain badly enough to start asking for it for another 2 weeks, or again, outside of Eretz Yisrael, for another 2 months, so we say Talumata.
I think they
publish
that you say Talumata.
The Arif Machilim, the Zayin Macheshvan, so all the Oshfuayim. No. Mashiach Ruach is a Tamid B'Shmini Atzeret. Tamid B'Shmini Atzeret. Gam Ba'aretz, Gam Ba'aretz. Ba'aretz is Gam Kim Simchat Torah. But B'Shmini Atzeret Simchat Torah, you know, that's Zel Mashiach Ruach Mori Lageshem. Talu Matar Matchilim B'Zayin Marcheshem. Lo, the Kram Yizvan. But again, it's interesting how you have this distinction between the two. Again, one is God, one is rain. Mashiv Aruach Umarid Hagashem is less about rain and more about God. Now let's take that one step further. We'll appreciate this even more. The Gemara already asked the question, why is Mashiv Aruach Umarid Hagashem in the second Brach of Shemoneh Esrei? Why did they choose to put it there specifically? And explains the Gemara, the primary theme of the second Brach of Shemoneh Esrei is God's resurrection of the dead. Right? Right, that we express our faith in the fact that the day is going to come, God's going to resurrect the dead. Says the Gemara, there are many parallels between the rain coming down and the dead being resurrected. The first parallel is just on a very basic natural level. Rain, in a sense, resurrects nature. Right? In other words, vegetation, which might have been dried out and kind of droopy and wilting and whatnot, is resurrected once the rain comes down and irrigates it and gives it water. So in a very, very real sense, you know, when we see the rain come down, we see a form of resurrection taking place in front of our very eyes. But that's one parallelism. Besides that, says the Gemara, the act of resurrection represents something that is done bigvura, with an incredible act of might. Gishamim coming down, rain coming down, is also an expression of God's gevura, of an incredible might expressed by the Ribbono Shel Olam. You don't quite get this? Let me throw out a couple of names that should make this very obvious. Harvey, Jose, Maria, right? If ever we needed in the past, you know, couple of months, reminders that rain is an expression of the sheer power of God, and the fact that God acts with gevura, with incredible might, I mean, we had the best lesson. Unfortunately, it's not a lesson that anyone was looking for, and certainly not the tremendous numbers of people in those various areas that were affected adversely by these hurricanes. But, you know, we who were onlookers are awed by the incredible might of the Ribbono Shel Olam and the sheer power, you know, that rain has, both for good and unfortunately for destruction as well. Rain is a mighty thing. The Gemara famously says in the beginning of the Sefer Tanis, again a statement many of us are familiar with, that there are certain keys that God never gives over to a messenger. Right? There's certain keys that God only operates himself. One of those keys is the key of childbirth. Right? That childbirth is somehow something that God, so to speak, micromanages, that he's involved in directly. Another such key is the key of resurrection. And another such key is the key of rain. Right? That, again, rain and resurrection are both considered to be such powerful things that God doesn't delegate those to anybody else. God himself possesses the key and uses the key to allow resurrection and the coming of rain to take place. He's directly involved in both of those things. For all of those reasons, says the Gemara, that's why the idea of God bringing down the rain is introduced into the bracha of resurrection. Right? They all represent the idea of God acting in a powerful fashion and in a direct fashion, and the very act of God bringing the rain is a reminder of how resurrection works. I want to pick up for a moment on that last point. What I'm going to suggest is that the importance of Mashiv Ruach Morid HaGeshem, you know, the reason that it's so important to say, and that if we forget it, we have to repeat Shemon Esrei, is because Mashiv Ruach Morid HaGeshem is the best, short of witnessing resurrection directly, short of, you know, witnessing somebody get out of their grave, brush themselves off, and, you know, come back to life, short of actually witnessing that, the best modern day or current day indication of God's ability to do that is to watch the power of rain. Right? Again, because of the tremendous power that rain possesses and the life-giving force that rain possesses. The rabbis put Mashiv Ruach Morid HaGeshem into Shemon Esrei to tell us, you may not be seeing resurrection with your own eyes, but if you witness rain, especially a heavy rain, a torrential rain, you can extrapolate from that God's power and ability to bring about a resurrection. Right, watching, what's that? Oh, so very, very good. So let me give a couple of proofs for this idea. Why is it that Mashiv Ruach is so important? Because watching rain is supposed to set off a little set of gears in our head. Oh, if God can make the rain happen, God can make resurrection happen as well. God can bring the dead back to life. Let me focus for a moment on the wind. We say not only Morid HaGeshem, we say Mashiv Ruach Morid HaGeshem, right? God causes the wind to blow and the rain to come down. Why is it so important to mention the rain? So one answer is, well, the rain is also, the wind is also an expression of God's power. Right? I mean, oftentimes in a hurricane, it's not even the rain which is the issue. It's the incredible winds that are so destructive and a source of God's power. Again, as people, witness the most recent hurricanes, as many of us, probably all of us, remember from Sandy, right? The winds were a tremendous aspect, a destructive aspect of, what that experience was all about. But there's another fascinating interpretation that's given by Rabbi Yehuda ben Yatar, one of the evil early medieval authorities, who says as follows, again fascinating. The word ruach has a double meaning in Hebrew. Ruach is also spirit, right? And when the pasuk in Yechezkel describes how God brings the dead back to life, again we read this as the Haftarah for Shabbos Chol HaMoed Pesach, it's chapter 37 in Yechezkel. Yechezkel is in the Valley of the Dry Bones, right, very famous vision. So the dry bones come back to life. How so? God blows a ruach into those dry bones and they're resuscitated. So even the language that Chazal shows in expressing the fact that God brings down the rain, Mashiv HaRuach Umarid HaGashem, says Rabbi Yehuda ben Yakar, in the word Ruach is a play on words. It means Ruach wind, but it also means Ruach spirit, because as we're watching the wind, in the back of our heads we're supposed to be thinking, you know, that God can instill a spirit into a dead body and bring that person back to life. If you like Gematria, you'll like the following. If you don't like Gematria, too bad, I'm going to say it anyway. But, okay, such as, but this also, this is recorded in the Rishonim. Tell me who exactly. Also, Rabbi Yehuda ben Yakar, again, one of the early medieval authorities. There's a pasuk in Yeshaya that talks about the way the world is going to be recreated when Mashiach comes and the dead are brought back to life. And that pasuk, we actually read it as the Haftarah, I think, for Parshas Kisavo, if I'm not mistaken, right before the end of the summer. The pasuk describes how God is going to recreate the world, and he's going to make a new life that's going to be Shivasayim Ka'or HaKama, seven times the light associated with the sun. It's going to be a new life, right? We talk about in our davening, or Chadash Al Tzion To'ir, he'll cause a new light to shine upon Zion, so the day is going to come, God is going to cause a new light to emerge, and that light is going to be seven times the light of the sun. If we think about the sun, or the light of creation, as being something that extended for 7 days, and then you multiply that by seven, there's a third seven in here somewhere, I'm not exactly sure how that third seven gets in here, but seven cubed, says Rabbi Yehuda ben Yakar, comes out to 343. Right? Seven times seven, take our word for it. Right, 343. The thing is, nowadays everybody has a calculator. You just pull out your phone and you can actually do it. But seven cubed is 343. 343 is the gematria exactly of Geshem. So says Rabbi Yehuda ben Yakar, Geshem. The very word Geshem doesn't just mean rain. It's also a hint to that supernatural light, seven times seven times seven, you know, Shivosayim Ka'or HaChama, right? Maybe because he uses the word Shivosayim is twice, I'm not sure, you know, I'm not sure where he gets seven cubed, but, you know, seven times seven times seven, seven times the light of the sun, again, this reference to what's going to be at the end of time, is exactly the same gematria as Geshem. When you're talking about Geshem, says Rabbi Yehuda ben Yakar, you're not simply focusing on the rain that's coming down. Again, in the back of your mind, you're thinking about the end of days and the incredible light which is going to be produced by the Ribbono Shel Olam at that time, and how that's, you know, going to be manifest, among other things, with the Tchiyas HaMesim, with the resurrection of the dead. So there's so many allusions that are packed into these four words. You know, what we're essentially saying with these four words is, God, I see your might and power in the incredible wind and rain that you're able to produce. I have faith that that same power will be utilized to resurrect the dead when the time comes. All of that is implicit in these four words of Mashiv HaRuach Umarid HaGashem. Now that we appreciate that, but now I think we appreciate a little bit more why it's important to have those four words, to the point where if you forget them, now you're missing something essential, you have to go back and say Shemoneh Esrei over again. It's not just, rain, yeah, okay, it's rain, Shemoneh, you know, whatever, you know, the rain in Spain, whatever. No, it's not just that. It's really an expression of God's power, God's might, and an expression of faith in the ultimate Kriyas HaMeshim, which is going to come about. We don't want to miss out on that opportunity. It's worth to go back and start the Shemoneh Esrei over again, to Chaperayim, you know, to get those four little words, which have so much meaning packed into them. Right, so that's the first 30 days, you have to go back It depends when you're not sure. The Pope can say, it's like 3 hours later, you wake up and say, wait a minute, I can't remember what I said this morning. 3 hours later, don't worry about it. But if during Shemoneh Esrei or immediately after Shemoneh Esrei, you can't remember, did I say it or did I not say it, within 30 days of Shemini Atzeres, you have to go back and say it over again, because you assume you just did what you were used to. After 30 days, we assume that it's enough of a, you know, enough of a hair growth, something that you're used to, you know, enough that you can assume that you said it properly. Okay, as mentioned, so I think we're going to be devoting this semester, if you will, to, you know, issues dealing with tefillah. This was sort of the initial seasonal shiur to get us off the bat. We'll be going back and talking a little bit more about the fundamentals of tefillah, and again trying to revisit some of the issues in the Siddur. Some things we talked about 14, 15 years ago, but hopefully a lot of new things also. It could be not everybody remembers everything from 14, 15 years ago, so including myself. So we'll go back and we'll do that, and we're looking forward, Hashem, to a wonderful year with a lot of learning together. So.